this has become more of a business rather than a hobby or even just a personal brand.
Cora Harrison is a serial content creator and jack of all trades. She has multiple YouTube channels, blogs, Twitter, Instagram, and newsletters, but not all under one umbrella name. Hey everyone, I'm Akta, and in today's episode of Creators on Air, we get to hear Cora's unique approach to content creation and how she's building digital assets to build her business.
I guess I'm most known on YouTube for cryptocurrency content. That's not how it started. I used to do a variety of personal finance content. I also do travel content with my wife, and we've just started a couple of other channels together. Some of them are with us in them. And then something we're trying sort of this year is outsourcing a lot of the content, so they're more faceless channels. The same goes for the website. So we have websites in a variety of different niches, cryptocurrency, we have some in travel, we have some in like camping and parenting. And we're looking to start 4 new websites this year, one in every quarter of the year. So yeah, a lot going on.
Oh my God, that sounds crazy. I don't know how you're keeping up with all of that. But I find it really interesting because a lot of people kind of make one personal brand and then have different businesses within that one personal brand. Whereas you're going on a completely different approach where you're basically setting up loads of different digital assets. Was that part of your strategy? Like, what made you decide to do that?
No, to understand it, I think you've got to kind of go back in time. I'll try and be brief as to how I got into this and then how I kind of got into the whole digital asset side of things, because I think that's probably the best way of describing it. They are digital assets. I used to own a Lego business. I used to sell Lego parts.
And no way.
Aside from that, yeah. I used to have like millions of parts that I would sell to model makers around the world. And I got really involved, and this was like my final year of university, really involved in the FIRE community, financial independence, retire early. I was really fascinated by it. And I was reading all these blogs and these websites by like Mr. Money Mustache and 1,500 Days. And I was like, do you know, I've got some hints and tips on how to save money. I'll start a blog. It was not with the intention of making money. Despite having a degree in computing and business, I did not know you could make money from a website. So I just made this like a traditional blog, like a diary. This is how I saved money this week. And about a year later, I started finding out that, yeah, you could make money off this. And I started doing really well. I started a YouTube channel, started making money off the blog. By really well, I mean like £100 a month. But at the time, I was like, wow, I can earn money online. This is fantastic. It led me and my wife to go out to Texas, and we went to a financial bloggers conference called FinCon. Now, at the time, we was writing travel content on the personal finance website, and I really kind of didn't like it. And this was my first big blogger conference, and so I was asking a lot of questions, and I decided there and then in Texas, we're going to start a travel website. So we've got this I've got this personal finance website, but then we're going to start this travel website together. Going to keep the two separate. They were both personal brands. Me and my wife still run the travel blog, and then I had the finance blog. So that's the start of two websites, which happens for most bloggers. I think it's very rare to find a blogger who's really stuck to one without thinking about another. A lot of us joke in the community, we have like 500 domains just on standby. So then I guess fast forward to maybe a year later, everything I had learned in the 3 years of personal finance blogging was condensed into, say, 3 months worth of writing on the travel blog. And the travel blog just blew up. It did absolutely fantastic, far better than me and my wife could have ever anticipated. And so the personal finance blog went to the wayside. And then shortly before like the pandemic, I was debating selling the website. This finance website that I'd had by this point for 7 years, I just wasn't as passionate about anymore. So yeah, I sold that online, or I tried to. The reason I struggled to sell that website was because it was so much of me involved in it. It was so much my personal brand. People didn't like having photos of me on the blog. It needed to be more faceless. So I eventually took those down and reworded it, and kind of made it, I guess, faceless, if you will. Anybody could have had that content. Anybody could have had that blog. And I did manage to sell it. Then, of course, 6 months later, the pandemic hit and the travel website did not do so well. We went from earning, say, four figures, like mid four figure range every single month. So I remember one month, it was like March 2020. I think we made $5 in the whole month. And I just thought, oh, no, what we're doing. So with the money that I had from selling the finance blog, we went on to start other websites. And we started during the pandemic. We had nothing else to do. We couldn't travel anywhere. It felt almost pointless writing on the travel blog. We had no idea when the world was going to open again. So we decided to start other websites. And now we own four or five, some of which are personal brands and some of which are faceless. So we could sell them very easily if we wanted to. And we did the same with YouTube. So then 2021, I really started pushing YouTube. Luckily, when I sold the finance blog, I didn't sell the YouTube channel that went with it. That had about 14,000 subscribers. So then I used that channel and really went from there, basically.
That's so interesting. And I'm really intrigued by the fact that you have both personal brands and like faces. Is there a difference in how they grow and how they perform?
Yeah, I think the personal ones I take a lot more of an interest in. They are associated to me and sometimes to me and my wife. I want to make sure that they are the best they can be. They are a reflection of us and our work. The faceless ones are not so much a reflection of us and our work, and therefore we outsource 99.9% of the content. And we're lucky to be in a position where we can do that and employ other people to help us write the content and get a return on investment that keeps them employed then for future articles.
So you're doing faceless YouTube videos as well. How does that work?
Yeah, so we will come up with the concept. We'll get a script together. We'll get a script writer. When I started, actually, I wrote the script and then kind of sent it to a script writer, or I did the reading. And then people just put over it, an editor we've hired just puts over it, and B-roll footage that you can get online either for free or from a subscription like Shutterstock or places like that.
Amazing. And so are most of your channels either to do with travel or finance? Is it like always one of the two?
No. They're the two biggest ones. The Faceless is relatively new. I try and only take on one big project a year, and this year is the big project, is making these faceless YouTube channels. So it's relatively early days as to find out what works. What we actually are trying to do is make sure that each blog also has an associated YouTube channel with it. And in most cases, that YouTube if that blog is faceless, the YouTube channel will also be faceless. And then they are two assets together that could be sold, you know, together if we wanted to, or maybe even separately. Because in the YouTube videos, we won't mention anything about the blog. We'll just talk about the project. But we have all the data from the blog. So I can go on and I can see, hey, 10 best camping tips is an article that's doing really well for us on our website. We should make a YouTube video about that because it's got the search. We've already got the research. We've already got the demonstrations that, you know, that topic works. So it's almost market research ready done for you.
And so because you've got all of these different assets, which basically have their own niche, I'm guessing that you're somebody who thinks that niche is really important for growing online. Is that fair to say?
I guess niche is somewhat important, maybe not as important as understanding your audience. I think if you can understand your audience and what they want, then that's more important than niche. I think personally, I like everything in its own separate bucket. Interestingly enough, when I went to this finance conference and I was saying, look, I've got these websites and I've got this website and I want to put travel content on this finance website, a lot of them said, go for it. And I didn't. I chose to separate the two, and I'm really, really glad I did. In hindsight, I'd have done far better in the pandemic if I'd have kept them both together, because I'd have had two niches in one area. But I didn't like the idea of somebody coming to a travel website and me also talking about how I plan to retire early and things like that. So I think as long as you understand it from an audience perspective, that's probably the most essential.
So what advice would you give to someone who is, say, multi-passionate, who's got lots of interests like you seem to, on how to go about it? Like, do you think it's a better route to have kind of separate buckets, or do you think that there is a way to combine it on a single platform? Because I know I struggle with this on YouTube. I don't have a niche at all.
Yeah, it is hard. I think you do a really good job of it. I think if you can go not too deep in one particular area and then just do surface level on maybe three or four different areas, that's fine. The problem with that is you're never going to get that far. You're just going to be on a surface level, where people have got to love you for you. if that's the case. They've got to come for your content, no matter what you do. In all honesty, nobody comes for me to my content. They come for the content itself. Anybody could deliver that content. It wouldn't matter who it is. It's about the content I am providing. Whereas for you, I think obviously it's a really good example. I think people come for you. They come for your aesthetic. They come for your vibe. For me, they come for the information that I am providing, and anybody could provide that.
And I guess that's quite strategic if you're thinking about long-term, you could sell those platforms as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And is that part of your business strategy? Is that what you think about all of your platforms? Like, what is there? What's the asset worth in the long term? Is that part of the way that you think?
It's definitely there as an option to sell them. It's a nice option to have. It's something I never planned to do with my first website. But as humans, we grow, we evolve. And what interests us, 10 years ago might not interest us now. And what interests us in 10 years might not be the things that interest us now. So it's definitely nice to have the option. I also think it's significantly harder to manage multiple websites and multiple digital assets compared to having one single asset. Therefore, if I do get to a point whereby, look, I don't want to deal with, seven or eight different assets, then I do have the option to sell them rather than, not having the option. So, yeah.
And does that limit you in terms of how much you can do with each asset? So for example, if we take just a normal YouTuber who's got that one YouTube channel and they've got that one vertical, but then they can build multiple horizontals within that, like, I don't know, start online courses, start an online community, they can do different things within that one asset. Because you're focusing on so many different assets, do you feel like you can only do so much for each one? Like, how do you manage that?
Focus on one thing on each asset. I guess some are more passive than others. Like the business ones, the faceless channels and the faceless blogs are 99% hands off. Whereas in my YouTube channel, it requires me to be in front of a camera, me to film the content. And therefore, whatever I can outsource where there's a positive ROI in that, I will. So I have an editor who helps me edit and things like that. But otherwise, sadly, I still seem to do everything in every single vertical. So I have a community, a paid community for the YouTube channel. I guess the only thing maybe I've strayed away from is the newsletter and Instagram and Twitter. Like, I don't do much on social media. And I don't, maybe other than YouTube, I class YouTube as slightly different. I class it as more of like the search engine. There it is. Because then I don't have to depend on me putting out content. The reason I love blogging so much is because I can write, 1,000 words, go on holiday for 6 weeks, and nobody knows that I've not uploaded a blog post, really. People come and they view blog posts from 3 years ago, which is very, very hard to do on YouTube. People on YouTube come for the content you are making today, and you have to be in front of a camera every single week or every other week or once a month. Whereas with a blog post, nobody knows if you've not put, nobody knew with my finance website that I'd not posted for 2 years. Nobody really cared. They came for old content that they'd found through Google search and not for me personally. So
which platform or which asset is actually bringing you in the most revenue or has been the most consistent for you financially?
Aside from the pandemic, definitely the travel website.
Oh, really? More so than the YouTube channel?
Yeah. We were really lucky that we worked very hard during the pandemic, not just on the other blogs, but in the end, we did decide, this is a great time for us to update our old content and to write extensive content on that. And so, yeah, I mean, the travel blog does not get the love it deserves. I spend far more time on YouTube, and YouTube's probably the second. But it does require, if you like split my time or return on investment of my time versus money, the travel blog outweighs the YouTube by miles, which is crazy.
And is that mostly through sponsored posts?
No, that is through ad revenue. So we work with an advertiser and the advertiser puts ads on our website and a number of other websites we have. And yeah, when you come to our website to find out information, you see adverts on our website and we get a commission whether you click on those adverts or not. So yeah, that's really good. And then after that is probably like affiliates. We don't actually do a lot of sponsored content on the blogs.
Incredible. So how happy are you to be transparent with us on like kind of the number of views that you're getting on blog posts and how that translates to AdSense revenue?
So on the travel blog, we roughly get about 150,000 page views every single month. 75% of that is from the United States, despite the fact I am here in the UK, which is unintentional. Lovely. Yeah, and that's where a lot of the significant ad revenue comes from. Obviously, the US has the highest ad revenue, RPM, CPM, whichever one you want to go on, that you can pretty much get. Travel is obviously a high CPM category, as is cryptocurrency. So I am in both high CPM and RPM categories. So yeah, about 140,000 page views every single month. And it is, we are breaking records month on month since the start of this year. I don't know about you, but me personally, like during the pandemic, we were like, when this ends, we are going to go on the best holiday of our lives. We are going to go on every holiday, every single week. We are going to do all the things we've put off and said we'll do later. And I think I think like 50%, maybe more of people are thinking the same thing wherever they can financially, or maybe where they can't financially, because she was like, no matter what the cost, you know, if we get locked down again, if we have to go back indoors, we're lucky to be here. So I think that's a lot of where the traffic is coming from, in the sense of it growing month on month. And it's blowing my mind. If I could tell myself like 2 years ago that we would be doing this well, I wouldn't believe myself.
So are you doing better than you were pre-pandemic?
I've been like 5 times better, 100 times better than pandemic.
Incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, pre-pandemic, that one blog and a little bit of the personal finance blog, I mean, maybe 50-50, that was our income as a couple. We didn't work. That was our income. And maybe at the time that was about, I don't know, $3,000 a month before tax. So yeah, then after pandemic, it's six figures in dollars. We just had our best ever month.
Congrats.
Thank you. We are so lucky because we had a little boy late last year. He was in hospital for like 3 weeks this year, back in February. That was when we had our best ever month. We were making low four figures per day while he was in hospital. And we didn't have to think about, you know, posting a blog post, or it was nice to not even think about posting a YouTube video or anything like that. And I think that's why I love blogging so much. Maybe even more than YouTube. I love them both equally. They each have their pros and their cons, but definitely that was like a highlight of, you know, I can just step away and we can do what we need to do, and that asset can keep making money. So lucky.
That sounds amazing. I can't believe it. I didn't realize the potential of blogs, because blogs you tend to kind of associate with kind of like, you know,
a lower class. You can say it, a lower class.
No, not even that. It's just a bit outdated, I guess. I feel like a lot of people tend to think that everything's video, everything's short term, you know, like TikToks, YouTube, that's where I feel like a lot of people spend their attention. I didn't realize blogs were still so valuable.
That's actually how I got into YouTube. I mean, we're talking like 2015 now, 2016. I remember going to a conference and it was like, video is next. You need to do video. And so I started a YouTube channel off the back of that. But yeah, I mean, YouTube, in the next 10 years, does YouTube have the bigger potential, or does video content as a whole, no matter what platform it has, no matter what platform it's on, have more potential than blog posts? Possibly.
So how do you stay on top of all these different platforms, all of these different assets, and the trends for each of them as well?
I cut myself a lot of slack that I can't respond to trends as much as maybe I'd like to. If I had one asset, then especially the cryptocurrency is so, like, you know, if you're an hour behind, things can have changed dramatically. So I cut myself a lot of slack when it comes to keeping on top of trends. And then I have a lot of help. I really focused late last year on creating SOPs, standard operating procedures, and like, where can I possibly outsource? Where can I get help? And other than that, like Notion and just being organized and having an operating system where everything is managed, and yeah, outsourcing as much as possible.
And how big is your team at the moment?
So we deal with a company who does all our writers. We could hire all our writers individually. We have gone down that road before, but it's more stress for us personally, because then we have to manage the writers. Whereas if we use a company, although it's more money, they then deal with all the writers. So I deal with one to three writing companies who have, you know, however many writers under them. And then three assistants who just help with various different tasks. And then two video editors. So what's that? Maybe like five people and then three companies.
You've already said that you spend majority of your time on the YouTube channel versus the blog.
Yeah.
So what kind of percentage would you say that you spend on each platform or on each asset?
I would say the cryptocurrency YouTube channel takes about, on a good week, 12 hours. On a crazy week, 30 to 40 hours. Then I would say just like general management of like the team is like 5 hours a week. The travel blog really varies depending on whether or not we've been on trips and what content we've got to write, etc. But I'd say anything from like 10 to 35 hours. And then there's, you know, all the websites and stuff. Oh, and then we just recently brought back our travel YouTube channel because we've been able to travel again. And that now takes, I don't know, maybe 8 hours a week. And then there's the other couple of new YouTube channels that we're working on. I don't know where I find the time. I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, I'm like, that is a lot of content. I struggle with one YouTube channel. I don't know how you're doing it.
I've been able to, where possible, drop quality over quantity, especially like in the cryptocurrency space. It's completely normal for the quality to be lower and the quantity to be higher. In travel and in the blogging industry, it's more frequent for the quality to be higher and the quantity to be lower. And understanding that and understanding whether or not you should post more or post better, it is up for debate. Like, it really depends on your audience and what they expect and your competition as well.
Yeah. And do you feel like, because you're seeing it from quite a business perspective, where you're seeing all of these channels as tools and you're seeing them as assets that you're using versus being so wrapped up in a personal brand, that you're actually able to separate yourself a bit more from what you do? Because I know that I kind of struggle sometimes with that.
Yeah, and I think maybe not taking things so personally. We've all been there when somebody says a bad thing about us on social media. And I think, I mean, that's why I stepped away from YouTube originally. I was like, oh, I don't want people to say bad things about me. I'll just hide behind a website and it doesn't feel as personal. But no, I think I've really been able to, in the past 2 or 3 years, as this has become more of a business rather than, yeah, like a hobby or even just a personal brand, really separate myself from the business, have an overview of different things, and also make better decisions based on the trends in different niches. I'm so lucky that I said that my experience in the finance website originally is what allowed me to be so successful in just like 3 to 6 months with the travel website. And I believe that all my assets are successful because now I'm able to get information and data and try things on different websites and different YouTube channels and different assets moving forward. I'm really able to be more agile and see the full picture.
Amazing. I love that. You've given me a whole new perspective on how to approach being a creator and having like a better business mindset. So I'm going to have a rapid fire now with you.
Okay.
And ask you a few questions that I didn't send over. So just answer as quickly as you can with just like a quick line, that's all. You don't have to overthink it.
Okay.
What's the best thing about being a creator?
The flexible working hours, doing what you want.
What's your favorite tool for creating or productivity?
Notion, definitely.
What gives you the most inspiration for your content?
Other creators. Seeing what other creators are doing.
One thing that's helping you with your creator work-life balance.
Oh, help. Asking for help, paid or otherwise.
Okay, that's a good one. And one piece of advice that you'd give to other creators?
Be kind to yourself. I think so many people look at other people and think, why can't I be like them? Why can't I have a successful website? Why can't I have a successful YouTube channel? Why has their newsletter got 100,000 people subscribed to it? And honestly, I think more often than not, they don't talk about or you don't see the 5 years, 8 years, maybe even more worth of work and research that they've put into it. And you'd be surprised how many bigger creators that maybe you idolize actually are idolizing other people as well. I think I've been suspect to looking at other people and what they're doing so much that I've not focused on myself. And while other creators are a massive source of my inspiration, I think you definitely need to be kind in what you're doing to yourself there, and take a break from looking at other people's content if you need to, and making sure that you're in the right headspace when you do look at other people's content so that it doesn't impact you negatively and is actually helpful in helping you create.
Thank you so much, Cora, for coming on our podcast. I feel like it's so eye-opening because I feel like not many people do what you've done by building different digital assets. So it's such a unique way to approach it. And I think it's going to inspire a lot of people.
All right. Thank you very much.
So did Cora inspire you with her business-minded approach? If so, be sure to check her out on Twitter and YouTube. Thanks for listening into our conversation. And if you are a creator, check us out on Twitter at @getpassionfruit. Stay passionate, and I'll see you in the next one.